Hey, what's up, Dynasty Command Center Nation? This is Curtis Patrick. I've got Travis May with me today. This is going to be episode 40 of the podcast. We're going to talk about the most intriguing prospects at the 2020 Reese's Senior Bowl. Players who are high on our draft list already and others who could really use this week to create some momentum for themselves as we head towards the NFL Combine. But first, I want to tease this. You got to feed your Dynasty Rookie Fever with our rookie guide. It's available at rotoviz.com right now. That's rotoviz.com. Check out the link and then start the pod.
Yeah, Curtis, I'm just pumped to talk about the Senior Bowl. Tons of players to get excited about. I mean, this time of year is just, when your NFL team is out, when your dynasty season's already been long gone, it's time to kind of move on and plan for the future. So there's tons of players to kind of look at this week. Going to be a bunch of videos of wide receivers burning corners and all that good stuff. But we're hopeful that we can probably help you sift through some of that noise and find a couple players that we're already highly ranked on, and maybe a few guys that could be some sleepers as well. Curtis, do you have any players in particular you're most excited for this week?
Well, I have a couple guys that I'm kind of disappointed that aren't attending. That's probably my bigger thing. Yeah. There's a lot of guys I really like this week, but my boy that I really wanted to go. Well, first, I think Tyler Johnson should have gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really, with what we're hearing about how teams might be valuing him versus, like what Dynasty Twitter thinks about Tyler Johnson, it would have been awesome for him to go and showcase his wares. And then kind of a homer pick would be KJ Hill. Really wanted to see what he could do there. But, I'm sure he has his reasons. What about you?
Yeah, I think there's several wide receivers I'm pumped to see. This week, I think there's a bunch of buzz already about Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State. I mean, just last year, N'Keal Harry was the guy out of Arizona State everyone was excited about. But Ayuk is a way different player. I mean, he's like a vertical threat, all-purpose guy. There's already some buzz that he might actually be one of those guys that draft Twitter kind of missed, and he might be in the first round discussion. But there's a lot of time in between now and then. But I want to see him because I don't think I've seen enough of him against top tier competition.
Yeah, that's a really good one, man. So for today, for this episode, we're going to just kind of review the whole Senior Bowl roster. And you, as our Debbie coordinator at RotoViz, I mean, you know these guys as well as anybody. So I'm going to let you kind of take the reins for that. But first, I want to talk about maybe some interesting points about the Senior Bowl, because I mean, there's a lot of events that lead up to the NFL draft, and how important is this one? A couple years ago, I don't know that I took this event as seriously, but in recent years, we started to see bigger name prospects attend this thing. I think that, and I think it's wise. I mean, unless you're a home run first round pick, and I mean, there is no doubt there's a lot to gain by going and spending an entire week with two coaching staffs that own really early picks. I mean, this year it's the Bengals and the Lions running the show. They own two of the top three picks in this year's draft, and maybe you're not in consideration at the 101 or 103 for those teams, but they own picks at the top of the second round too, and that's a good place to go to stop a slide.
Yeah,
impress those coaching staffs. So that's really the first point. It's the first extended look at these players being run through an NFL style practice with NFL coaches and NFL expectations. But there's some really interesting points about the 2019 Senior Bowl. The 2019 Senior Bowl was wildly successful. Actually, 10 players from last year's Senior Bowl were first round draft picks. Now, for fantasy purposes, the only guy that was really relevant was Daniel Jones, who ended up going way higher maybe than anyone thought. I don't know anyone really believed he was going to go top half of the first until it actually happened, but maybe this is part of what went into that. But going a little deeper, Travis, in the first three rounds of the draft, 40 players from the 2019 Senior Bowl roster were selected. I mean, almost 40% of day one and day two picks. So, I mean, again, those aren't all going to be offensive skill players. But this is an event that, as dynasty players, we cannot afford to ignore. at this point, given the quality of these players.
Yeah, I remember thinking the same thing a few years back and looking at the rosters a couple of times. And man, it's like those are the guys you're going to be excited about. But it's definitely, I think, come to the forefront in the minds of not only Dynasty Twitter, but clearly some NFL decision makers that are, you know, having their scouts and staff even go out to this game. And so for those not already familiar with the Senior Bowl, I hope you are now, that this is kind of the beginning of the draft process. Where things really start to matter, where things really start to stick. But we'll just jump right into some of the players, kicking off with a couple quarterbacks, because, I mean, there's not many guys at quarterback amid this bunch that are probably expected to see significant draft capital. I know that there are some Jordan Love truthers out there. I'm not really sure where he's going to go, but he's not the names that I think we're probably most excited about at the quarterback position. I mean, you got Jalen Hurts, obviously. He's interesting because of his mobility and his final season that was just incredible at Oklahoma. And then you have Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert should be a top 10 pick by many people's estimation right now. And Jalen Hurts looks like a guy that he could still be like an early second round selection. At this point, if you look at a bunch of the mocks right now, with a bunch of the talks right now, and really when you look at his adjusted passing numbers, his final season, there's really not much to dislike with him. But really with those two, Curtis, where do you have Justin Herbert ranked right now? Because I feel like he's one that's hard to gauge. I found myself back and forth with where to slot him in when making my rankings.
Yeah, I'm pulling up our Superflex rankings first, because that, I mean, we're talking, sure, quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
You know, that's going to be, you know, where it's really applicable. And I've got him 7 there. In my head, he's a better prospect than Daniel Jones was last year. And Daniel Jones had to be, even for people who didn't like him, people looked at him as a late first, early second pick in Superflex, just because of the power, the scoring potential power that those players possess in that format. And so, you know, a guy that's going to go in the top 10, top 15 at worst, I think we have to push him in to the mid to late first round, even if you're not nearly as high on him as, you know, Tua or Joe Burrow. I've currently got him 7th, and I'm looking at your rankings. You've also got him in the late first. It looks like you've got him about 10th. You know, I know we're still adjusting for some of these players who didn't declare and really fine tuning these rankings, but we both seem as a first round pick. Let me hop over to the you know, just vanilla PPR rankings as well and see what we've got there. It looks like you've got Herbert as a borderline round 2, round 3 pick, and I've got him in round 3. So we see him pretty similarly.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes when you look past the 1 and 2 quarterback in a lot of rookie drafts, people tend to, you know, have their favorites, and if they don't miss, you know, not saying Mitchell Trubisky's worked out, but he's been productive in fits at times, and especially in one quarterback leagues. I mean, those guys that are safe in terms of getting a shot for the first 3 years in their career, and actually can produce on your lineup as a spot starter, they just get completely left for dead and taken in the 3rd round, 4th round, of 5th round of rookie drafts, and they're just completely forgotten. So I think the guys after, you know, the guys just a tier down, that's where I love to target those guys. And I think that's exactly who Justin Herbert is this year. And he's not going to cost you much. Even in Superflex drafts, depending on the size of your league, he could drop somewhat. And same goes for Jalen Hurts, because he might not get the top end draft capital, but he has the crazy rushing upside where if he gets a shot to start anywhere, he's probably going to be start worthy, especially in 14, 16 team leagues for quarterbacks. So I have him even as a mid 3rd round pick. I think I'm the highest among our rankers, but Jalen Hurts, just given his rushing upside and what we just saw, you know, Lamar Jackson able to do with his rushing ability, you really can't discount the incredible nature of the season that Jalen Hurts just put together. He had like 1,300 rushing yards, no big deal, at the collegiate level, and almost 4,000 passing yards, great adjusted numbers, 4-to-1 TD-INT ratio, a lot of good things. So he was really out to make a point and say that he's good enough to make it in the pros. So I'm interested, if he sneaks into the back end of the 1st round or even as a top 50 pick, I think the team's going to give him a shot. Where do you have him ranked, Curtis?
Just a few slots lower than you, but again, we're kind of on the same page here. So in Superflex, I've got Hurts as a right on the end of the round two, mm-hmm. and you've got him just inside round two, kind of a later. Yep. I think you get, it looks like 18-19 range. Mm-hmm. So I want to do something real quick with the RotoViz box score scout with each of these guys, because what's really cool with this thing, especially before the combine, we're really only using a player's production and their body of work in college to generate a comps list. And so for Justin Herbert, I'm just going to plug in, you can plug in a custom draft pick and then it'll generate the comps using their production and the draft position. So I'm going to throw in draft pick 10 for Herbert. We both thought maybe top 10 was fair for him. Here are a few comps for him. It's a little bit of a mixed bag. Geno Smith actually shows up as the number one comp, ended up being a second round pick. But we also see Drew Locke, Teddy Bridgewater, Matthew Stafford. So there are some positive comps there within his top six. I don't know if we can call Locke a positive comp yet, but he certainly looked pretty decent toward the end of the season. I want to do the same thing for Jalen Hurts real quick. What are we thinking there? Like mid round two,
yeah,
late
pick,
round two,
pick 50-ish,
actual NFL
maybe?
Pick? Pick 50? Yeah, I think that's good. I think teams still want to see some things here. I'm wondering if Tim Tebow is going to come up. Wow, this is an interesting list for Jalen Hurts. This is a really interesting list, even with pick 50, man. So, okay, there's a certain Super Bowl winning quarterback that plays out on the left coast who's his number one comp, Travis.
Oh, my gosh.
Russell Wilson okay. shows up as Jalen Hurts' number one comp. And then, I mean, this is a great list, actually. Man, so Russell Wilson's number one, Andy Dalton's number two. Tyrod Taylor's number three, Dak Prescott number four. You want to talk about a solid top four comps? I mean, that's like the who's who list of later round quarterbacks who have gone on to be successful in the last decade.
Absolutely. Hey, a lot of fun right there. That's got me pumped. I might have to move them up my rankings.
Yeah, we might have to. I think Hurts, though, is a great example of why the Senior Bowl is good. So if you want to accuse Jalen Hurts maybe of just benefiting from that amazing Oklahoma system and playing with, you know, a consensus top two wide receiver in the class and CeeDee Lamb, now we get to go see how he takes instruction from somebody other than Lincoln Riley and, you know, what he looks like throwing more of a basic, you know, route tree that's going to be installed and, you know, other offensive language. So this is a great exercise for a player like Hurts. Any other quarterback notes before we move on to the running backs?
Jordan Love is going to be the guy that needs to prove it. He didn't have the year that a lot of people thought he could. He was a guy preseason that could have been going higher in the first round. So if he really impresses some guys, especially in interviews and things like that, he could definitely move up in my rankings and the real draft boards for a lot of teams, I'm sure. Plus, one more note on Hurts, though. He's going to be wearing a sweet helmet this week. It actually is split between Alabama on one side with his two and then Oklahoma on the other side, apparently. So it's at least he's going to look cool. But moving on to running backs this week, I'm not really excited. I would have loved, like I think you mentioned earlier, just seeing Zach Moss being there, but he's not actually going to be in the field. We've got an interesting bag of running backs. We really have to go down to what our consensus running back six or so, and Eno Benjamin before we get to a guy that we're really excited about. And then we've got Keyshawn Vaughn, but Eno Benjamin, where do you have him ranked?
Eno, we both got Eno as kind of a mid round two guy for dynasty rookie drafts if they were going to happen today. He's inside the top 18 for each of us. I've got him, I think, at 15. You've got him at 18.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some of the questions with Eno, you know, Pac-12 competition, what does that really look like? He's a little bit on the smaller side. So, he's not so small that he's not a good prospect. I mean, he weighs over 200 pounds. But compared to some of the other backs in the class that are ranked in front of him, he's on the smaller side. But
yeah,
can catch the ball. You know, the class isn't as deep as it was, obviously, about a week and a half ago. So I was curious if he was maybe going to be a late scratch for this event. I don't know how much he can really do to boost his draft position by participating. I don't know if he can get himself into late day two consideration, even if he pops this week. But maybe if he pairs it with a strong combine, is there anything in particular you want to see him do this week?
Yeah, I think that those players that you see do really well, like get the honors and awards and all the accolades from this weekend at running back, tend to get a lot more exposure and even maybe some capital. Like Kareem Hunt was a guy who was probably not going to be a day two guy until he went to the Senior Bowl and really showed out. And I think Eno could be that guy because there's just not a whole lot of other competition here I'm super worried about, except for maybe Keyshawn Vaughn and maybe P. Ryan, but Benjamin, I mean, he reminds me of Singletary in that, like, I wasn't sure he was going to be a day two guy, but he squeaked in because, like, he just had a lot of good positive traits and production that went with him. I mean, he had that massive, Benjamin, that is, had like the 92% and 86% running back dominator in his final two seasons at Arizona State. Mm-hmm. So he's got all the production you want to see. I just, that size makes me think he's probably going to drop to early round four, at which point he's not really an early pick for me. But Keyshawn Vaughn is a guy, I think a lot of film-based analysis people really do love him just because of what he was able to do against the toughest competition in the country on a really, really bad team for Vanderbilt. I am a Vandy season ticket holder. I've seen the worst football played imaginable, but Keyshawn Vaughn is not one of those guys that puts on the bad tape, and he really did great things, and he was really the only good thing the offense for Vandy had going this year. Where do you have him ranked right now, Curtis?
Well, before I tell you my ranking, I did punch in Vaughn to the box score scout. Do we feel like early day three is where he would be right now?
Yeah, I think around like pick 100. He's like right on that cusp for me, something like that.
I've got 110 plugged in right here. So early to mid fourth, we'll use that. A couple comps that come up here. James Conner is the number one comp. And don't tell TJ Calkins, but Kenneth Dixon is his number two comp. I have a feeling Vaughn might shoot up TJ's rankings if he finds that out. But there are a couple other interesting names. Doug Martin shows up. And then this will take you back. This will take you back a couple years, but Zach Stacy.
Oh, Zach Stacy. Another Tate. Running back.
Yeah. Ben Tate and David Montgomery. So there's certainly some relevant names.
Yeah.
Mike Davis even shows up. Mike Davis popped. He had some games, some small streaks where he was fantasy relevant. Really not a lot of whiffs in this list, but also no real multi-year, like long-term dynasty assets other than maybe we could call Doug Martin that, or if James Conner were to recover in 2020, we could call him that. The thing I got to mention about Vaughn is his age though, Travis. So he's a redshirt senior running back. We like young running backs at RotoViz. So this is really a tape-based analysis. Keyshawn Vaughn's going to fail a lot of the things that we would typically use at our site. But for people who chart games, for people who look at system fits, for people who are film grinders, like you said, he shows up as a favorite. He's going to be 23 in May though.
Mm-hmm.
23 in May. I mean, that is as old a running back prospect as really you'll see.
Well, it's basically Sony Michelle. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. When you look at it that way, except from not a great program. And it certainly doesn't have the same buzz going in. But okay. So you wanted to know the rankings on Vaughn. So let me pull up the vanilla PPR rankings again. You'll be able to see all of these in the Dynasty Commits and a Rookie Guide. Keyshawn Vaughn, I currently have we actually both have him at 36 right now, Travis. Yeah, identical rankings.
That's funny. That's probably about where he settled. He could go higher, but he really has to get the draft capital to go up near the second round for me, most likely. And yeah, I don't like him being that old, but the truth is Vandy was only able to muster like 170 pass yards per game this year. And he still averaged like over 5 yards per carry. Had over 1,000 yards, caught some balls along the way as well. I think he's just an all around back. He struggled to stay healthy, but I mean, even as a true freshman way back in 2015, for Illinois, he actually broke out there before kind of, deciding to move back down to Tennessee, but definitely a polarizing guy who I think he could definitely, if he's one of those guys that just proves to everyone there that he's the best running back, he could see that day two draft capital and be a guy that we're all of a sudden a lot more interested in. Cause I remember a lot of people ranking Kareem Hunt. I
keep using him as an example, but he was definitely not an early selection pre-Senior Bowl. So it's just really huge. And I think it's going to be one of those two guys that takes the next step.
I'm going to submit one more name for consideration out of the running back group. A guy I'm really curious to see play just in a different system, maybe with some different linemen. It's Lamical Perine out of Florida. Florida's line play, and then especially just their whole offense in 2019 was just pure garbage. So people, Cam Akers, he's not playing in the Senior Bowl. But Cam Akers is thought of by some to be an elite level running back prospect, despite poor production as his college career went on. And a lot of that is because people feel like, he was still able to create some for himself despite a poor line in front. Well, you could make a lot of the same arguments for Lamical Perine, not a talent on the level of Akers per se. But if you put a competent group in front of him, I'm really curious. He finished very strong. He was actually the Orange Bowl MVP, and he caught 40 balls this year. That's what really interests me. Really flashed the receiving ability, at least showing competence there. And so, if we're gonna throw dynasty darts at guys that don't get drafted at the running back position until day three, it certainly helps if they have the feather in their cap of being able to catch the ball. I'm not gonna draft a pounder goal line type, late in dynasty drafts anymore. I typically don't do it anyway. Last year I did it with Kadri Allison, and I pretty much immediately regretted it, even though it was a round four pick. It just feels like such a throwaway. I mean, you basically have to play game script, and even if they ever take on the role. So a guy like Perine, who can bruise a little bit but can catch the ball, maybe he falls into some workhorse production at some point in that first contract. So I'm really curious to see how he measures up, in particular against Vaughn and Benjamin, amongst the guys that we're interested in. Do you have any thoughts on Perine?
Yeah, I do like him some. I think he flashed in some certain games. I think at the very beginning of the season, the Miami game, he had a really solid run where he basically ended the game against Auburn. So I'm not a fan of that moment. But I think he could definitely prove a lot to at least secure some draft capital for himself. Darius Anderson is the last guy, too. I guess I would probably mention just because he's going to be an athletic freak. He's going to wow everyone at the combine. So that's exciting to think about there. I think his burst score is just gonna be off the charts, like 40-inch vert, and everything you want to see physically. But I'm not super high on Perine, but one of those four for sure is gonna be the guy to see the buzz.
Yeah, I think for him, he's more of a guy that goes from Are dynasty players at large even on their radar? Are they even interested at all to maybe being on the radar? Whereas I think the guys you mentioned earlier, like Benjamin, slightly lesser extent, Vaughn, they could actually move up. Maybe they could become, Benjamin with a really strong showing, securing the draft capital, could maybe move into that round one, round two borderline.
Absolutely.
And Vaughn could maybe vault to the second round of dynasty rookie drafts with a strong showing. So we're going to talk about tight ends and wide receivers, but before we do that, I want to talk a little bit more about the Dynasty Command Center Rookie Guide. And this is the final week of presale. Volume 1 actually will drop next week. And we've still got our presale pricing, this week. And it's just $14.99 for all three volumes. So we do a volume before the NFL Combine. We do a second volume where we add in, the athleticism, and anything else that, we have learned, between now and that process. And, a couple guys that maybe are injured, get a little bit more perspective on how they're healing. A guy like Tua Tagovailoa is one that would fall into that. And then issue 3 is, of course, after the NFL draft, once we know the landing spots and, can adjust for team situation, all those things. So this is absolutely great. We've got a little bit of a different take on it. For those of you that have purchased it in the past, it's going to look a little bit different. Going to be a little bit more analytics-based than it has been in the past. Some new guys jumping into the guide this year as well. Of course, Traps and I have been involved, but we've got Sean Siegel involved, Blair Andrews involved. I've already seen Sean's piece. It's really, really great. Kind of a perspective on breakout age and explaining it in a easy to comprehend, easy to understand way, and in a way that I'm sure will make you want to apply it to your rookie draft strategy if you don't already do that. TJ Calkins is doing a great piece that you're going to not want to miss whatsoever. He's going to lay out our rookie tiers and then give you veterans in the NFL that you should ship off for picks in said tier. I mean, that's as applicable a piece as I can think of for a rookie guide. Not something that people typically would think they'd see in a rookie guide, but that's the type of thing you're going to get. So check it out. rotoviz.com, plenty of information about it. Just check out the 2020 rookie guide link at the header of the site and grab your pre-sale today. It'll ship out directly to your email inboxes next week as soon as it's up. All right, Travis, let's talk about the tight ends.
For sure. And the tight ends are intriguing. I love the tight end position. If you followed me for that long, I love breaking down the tight ends all the time. But this is the only position that actually has my number one overall at the position showing up at the Senior Bowl. And that's Bryson Hopkins for my alma mater, Purdue. So I might be a little biased there, but I think a lot of people have come around on the all-around tight ends, like the players that can block, the players that can receive. I mean, think about, you know, George Kittle being a fifth-round pick a few years back and just how silly that truly was, ignoring the fact that he could dominate as a blocker and stay on the field and catch the ball and dominate at the point of the attack too. So I'm not saying Bryson Hopkins is the George Kittle of this class, but he might just be the George Kittle of this class when it's all
Holy
said and done.
Smokes.
So, he's somebody that a lot of people just look over because he played for Purdue. And he had to put up with the most embarrassing display of quarterback playing in the Big Ten this year. They finished the season on the guy who was a walk-on and the quarterback four to open the year. So, and he still got 800 receiving yards at the tight end position. So Hopkins is a guy, I think he's going to get the draft capital. I think he's going to be an early day two real draft capital selection and potentially be the tight end one in this class. I'm not sure if I have him the highest right now or not. Where do you have him ranked?
We both have them we both kind of have a top three tier of tight ends. That's kind of what I'm seeing across the road of his staff right now, actually. Okay. You've got to help me. Albert O.
Okwuegbunam?
Okwuegbunam.
It's just Albert Okwuegbunam.
Okay, Bunam, not Bunam. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Albert Okwuegbunam. Okay,
yep, there you go.
So we've got Alberta. I'm a pro.
Aquaman.
I can learn, man. Aquaman. I can learn.
Just call him Aquaman.
No, I mean, I'm going to try to say the last. I'm going to say the last name until I know how to do it, and I'm going to wield that power, and then I won't have to say anymore.
Yeah.
But I got to prove
by
myself.
By April, we'll get this. Yeah.
Yes. So Albert Okwuegbunam, Hunter Bryant, and Bryson Hopkins. Those are kind of a top three tier of tight ends. I think draft capital, athleticism could certainly help those guys separate. Hopkins may be more of a late career bloomer. Albert O, or Aquaman, as you want to call him, actually fell off toward the end of his career and some questions on him now. But we both got all of these guys as late round two, early round three in vanilla PPR. But let's talk about tight end premium, because that's, you know, that would speak maybe to how do these guys compare to a really strong, you know, like blue chip tight end class. Because in the past, we've seen in tight end premium some round one valuations on these guys. And neither of us are really boosting these guys too much, Travis. I think the earliest I see a tight end in either of our tight end premium rankings right now is 18th. And that's where you've got Hopkins in the Senior Bowl. So it'll be interesting to see how high you might bump him. If I give him a draft position of 40, so early day two, and the RotoViz box score scout, we do see some pretty juicy comps in his top 10. We've got Kyle Rudolph, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, among guys that have been, you know, really fantasy relevant. That's a great list. I mean, even a Kyle Rudolph outcome in a tight end premium league. I mean, he's had a couple seasons where, you know, he was very, you know, top three, top five producer at the position, even though he hasn't had the consistency year to year. And then we see some other guys, of course, on the draft position comp, like, you know, Kobe Fleener never really panned out. Clive Walford was kind of like a, you know, wannabe post type sleeper guy for a little bit. the big miss in this tier or in this cohort from the Box Score Scout, and unfortunately, the number one comp for Bryson Hopkins, although they're not similar players at all, is Jason Morrow.
Yeah, yeah, definitely not the same style of player. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of positive outcomes for Hopkins for sure. But there's kind of a major drop off to me in this group of tight ends after that. I mean, I like Harrison Bryant. He won the Mackey Award for being, you know, the best tight end in college football. I don't get that. He was really good within his role, but he was really a tight end that was kind of schemed open more than anything. He's not going to wow with athleticism. Josiah DeGuara from Cincinnati, he at times functioned as the wide receiver one, just de facto, in their heavy run-based scheme, and still racked up over 500 yards this past season. Good name to know. Jared Pinkney was supposed to do good things, and I still believe in his potential. A lot of people preseason, pre-college football season, were calling him a potential round one tight end. I think he could still be that. He just didn't do anything because Vandy averaged 170 passing yards per game, and they refused to target their big tight end ever because they never even really got to the red zone. Pinckney's a guy. He's the guy, I think, that could prove the most this week, just showing what his raw tools could do at the next level.
Wow. Wow. If Pinckney were even to return round two draft capital, Mike Gesicki shows up as a very strong comp.
Yeah.
And let's say he doesn't do much at Senior Bowl week and he becomes an early day three guy. You know, Tyler Higbee, who didn't do much early in his career, but really broke out. So, you know, I think that's what's really interesting with Pinckney, is that just because the production wasn't there doesn't mean we don't see some good comps show up.
Yeah. I think that's the key. You just want to see players make a difference and get some hype generated. And I want to see his combine. I want to see just how big he is. He's listed, I think he's maybe 260. I think he's going to be even thicker than that and still be just as fast as this field of tight ends for sure. But you want to talk about some wide receivers here as we before we close?
Yeah, and let's kick it off with a small school guy who seems to have just a massive, like, passionate following that I'm seeing emerge on Twitter from Tiny Liberty, Antonio Gandy Golden.
What a name.
Tell me a little bit about Antonio Gandy Golden. I'm going to pull up some stats here, but
sure.
Tell us what you know.
So Antonio Gandy Golden, or AGG, what a lot of people like to call him at this point, he played for Liberty. And obviously, when you play for a school that is not even Division One until just two seasons ago, people are going to question whether or not, you know, you actually did anything of note, actually did anything that was worth getting excited about. But really, I mean, when you look back to his true sophomore season, the very first game of his true sophomore season, he faced off with Baylor, and, you know, just dropped a simple 13 catches for 192 yards and three scores on Baylor as a true sophomore. He went on to have over 1,000 yards that season, 10 touchdowns. It may have been more than 10 touchdowns that season, but he had three seasons in a row in college, regardless of the level of play, with over 1,000 yards and 10 scores. So that's not to be ignored. And he really broke out even in his first year a little bit. It just wasn't always against the, you know, the Power Five competition. So he's somebody who's got the 6'3", you know, big physical wide receiver size. I think he's actually going to have some decent speed. So I think he's a guy that's going to rise throughout the entire process at every turn. So I don't know where he's going to settle in the draft capital, but if it's day two, look out, because he's going to be an early pick. With Antonio Gandy Golden, it's important to note that when you're looking up his stats and checking out his numbers throughout his career, a lot of this stuff, when you look at pre-2018, it's not really going to be in a lot of places. If you go to Sports Reference, I love Sports Reference. It's great to find a bunch of stats, but because they weren't Division One, you have to go dig into like the Liberty's like sports website just to find all the stats and game logs and things like that. Because they were just at a lower level of football, but he really had an incredible season. But if you look at like our box, you know, I don't want to do that because like
Box Score Scout. Yeah. Cause then we don't have,
Let me fix that. I'll make that more concise. But one thing to remember with Antonio Gandy-Golden, when you're looking up his stats, a lot of times you're not going to see the stuff that I just said unless you dig a little bit more for the information, because in 2017, that was their final season before they went to Division One. Yeah, they'd have a game or two against a Division One opponent before then, but really you don't see his stats emerge, and you don't see him as a player emerge to the forefront of college football and real analysis taking place on that player, because he just wasn't at that level of play just yet. But the raw traits are there. The production, regardless of the level that he produced, it's there. And really, the past two seasons against D1 teams just absolutely dominated at every single turn.
Yeah, final two seasons. Let's see, junior season, 44% dominator, 36% as a senior. And like you said, back-to-back seasons of over 1,000 yards. But even if we want to just talk with the Division One seasons, back-to-back seasons of 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. So, you know, an event like the Senior Bowl where he can play against guys from Power 5 schools, guys who were highly recruited and really prove himself, this is a very crucial week for him. A couple seasons ago, we saw Cooper Kupp flash after being out of Eastern Washington. Some of these, so the same questions existed about Cooper Kupp at that time. And I believe Andy Isabella was at the Senior Bowl last year and was able to house a touchdown. Certainly didn't hurt him. We saw him go in the second round, not just based on the Senior Bowl, but I'm sure that evaluation didn't hurt.
Absolutely. Definitely really can't sleep on those small school players anymore. It's just bad process. I mean, if you're not thinking about every single type of player, you're just not looking where you need to. But there's Michael Pittman Jr. Is he the highest ranked guy in this crew for us among the wide receivers? Or is it more like maybe Brandon Ayuk? Or I'm curious who your top option is.
Yeah, it's Brandon Ayuk, and I think that's mostly being informed by his assumed draft capital at this point. You and I both have him as a late round two guy right now, and we've got Pittman more in the mid third.
Yeah, and I'm just a little bit worried about Pittman's draft capital, but if he sees the capital, he's got the physical frame. He kind of had a later breakout just because USC always has about 17 wide receivers that are pretty good. But Brandon Ayuk, just to kind of hash out, if he sees the draft capital, his profile is going to be nasty, because he was an all-purpose kind of monster in JUCO before he even played in Division One. Somewhat similar to Antonio Gandy-Golden, but really broke out even with N'Keal Harry on the team. He was still the go-to second option with Arizona State, just kind of showing up at the front door. But this past season, absolutely dominated for Arizona State, and really put together a great final season, dominator rating of like, I think 39%, 40%, somewhere in that range. So really checks a lot of boxes for me. And if he gets that draft capital, that's the last bit. And he's going to probably be ranked higher for me.
Yeah, we see some really great comps for Ayuk, even with just like a mid round two value on him for draft pedigree. Let's say if he were to go around pick 40 to 45, we see Michael Gallup, who's been, you know, just a raging success as a former third round pick, as his number one comp. Sidney Rice, for those of you that have been playing fantasy football for a while, had a couple big years. We see Torrey Smith, Sammy Watkins, AJ Green, Jeremy Maclin. So definitely some fantasy producers. A lot of the sim there being driven by career receiving yard market share. And these are also some guys who had high final season touchdown per game ratings, big play artists and red zone artists. So a pretty good combo. I think to solidify some of these comps, though, we'll have to see how fast he runs. I mean, he's going to have to – a lot of these guys are a little bit bigger but still running sub 4.5. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do at the combine.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be key, but I think he's got the speed. I think if you turn it on, he's just got a lot of fun to watch. He's one of those guys. He just plays with an extra gear, I guess, to use a very film based term there, but I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch this whole week. And you're going to see a lot of short videos of him absolutely destroying defensive backs. Because, and really keep in mind that the defensive backs this week is, it's one of the weaker crews we've seen at corner here recently. When Christian Fulton decided he wasn't going to make the trip, there really wasn't even, I think there might be one barely kind of almost day two guy going to show up. So the wide receivers should absolutely smash all week long. Are there any other wide receivers in this group that you really are going to be watching all week long though?
Yeah, Colin Johnson, he was huge in Debbie circles for a while, and then kind of, he didn't go like quietly into the night, but yeah. I just don't think he popped to the degree that we would have liked to seen. After the beginning of I just really wish he would have come out last year.
Yeah.
I think he really would have benefited both in draft capital and in dynasty draft capital. And then his teammate, Devin Duvernay, I think, I'm very interested to see how they, I think that it's interesting to see how they stack up. Is it the guy who's been more solid for his whole career or the late bloomer that's going to show up? But I love that you just sprinkled in that nugget like it was nothing about the strength of the cornerbacks, because I don't think that's content you're going to get a lot of other places. And if you didn't know that the cornerback group was weak, I mean, there could be a temptation to drive a lot of these guys up the board. I mean, if the Senior Bowl ends up being, you know, an 80-point score fest and the receivers are going off, I mean, you know, we got to be careful about elevating these guys if they're not playing against, you know, top level future NFL prospects. So I appreciate you sharing that. I don't know that I was fully aware of the strength of the corners.
Yeah, there's a couple safeties, and they're probably going to get enough pass rush off of just like the upfront tackle group that's there. But yeah, the corners are not the strongest that it has been in recent years. So I'm not going to take too much stock into them beating this corner group this week. But I'm still going to be watching nonetheless. But there are some kind of like late round guys I'm definitely taking a look at in this crew too, with James Proche from SMU, set the all-purpose yards record for SMU. Actually broke out even with Cortland Sutton and Trey Quinn still on the team. Finished this past season with 15 touchdowns, which is also an SMU record. Just absolutely smashed it at every opportunity that he had to. So I really want to see him take off. I actually have him ranked at the back end of the round three, I believe. I think he's going to get some capital and really surprise some people. Kalijah Lipscomb, I obviously like too, just because he's a Vandy guy. He broke out early as a sophomore in the SEC. But those are two names I'm still excited for the opportunity to see some draft capital.
I'm so glad that you brought up Proche there, James Proche.
Prochet. Yeah.
we'll learn all these names and say them the right way by the end of the process here. But interesting nuggets. So he actually leads the entire draft class. When we're not just talking seniors, we're not just talking Senior Bowl. We're talking the entire draft class at the wide receiver position in career receptions, career receiving yards, and career receiving touchdowns. I mean, so he's basically got the wide receiver production triple crown. I don't think we can just look past that. No. I mean, he's been a solid producer for multiple seasons. And then, like you said, I mean, the last two NFL worthy receivers to come out of SMU, are guys that in their own ways have answered the bell in terms of where they were drafted and what they've been able to do. I mean, Trey Quinn's been able to stick on rosters and, you know, Cortland Sutton finally breaking out, of his shell in year two. So, that does make him a little sneaky. Of course, don't love to see, you know, the older prospect here in a fifth-year senior too. I mean, he's a red shirt, so that doesn't necessarily help. He's going to be older, but at least he did something with his time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm pumped to see what he does this week and see if he can generate some buzz, because he's one of my favorite kind of late-round guys in this crew. But this has been a lot of fun kind of hashing out the Senior Bowl and getting ready for all that's going to come with this week and everything that's really coming after this week, because I think people still talk about the Senior Bowl until the Combine comes. But lots of players to get excited about.
Absolutely, man. And I'm so thankful for podcast partner with all this Devy knowledge to get into some of these deeper prospects who aren't the blue chip elite guys. Hope you have fun watching the Senior Bowl. Those of you listening, and you know, maybe we'll see some of these guys pop, or we can finally cross some of these guys off of our prospect list for 2020 with a poor showing, or you know, hopefully we won't see any injuries. But you know, that's also part of the game. So we'll be back again later this week with a second episode. We're on our 2-episode-per-week schedule now. Be talking about some other great dynasty topics. Probably hit on rookies a little bit, but maybe more on some 2020 offseason dynasty trade targets and tending to those rosters in ways other than spending those draft picks, because you know it's a lot more than rookie draft and nailing those that goes into being a successful dynasty player. So we can't ignore tending those rosters, Travis.
No, absolutely. But guys, thanks again for joining us for another episode of the Dynasty Command Center podcast. Definitely check us out throughout this rookie draft season, and definitely check out the rookie guide. Just can't wait to share all the good stuff that comes with that. But until next time, keep living that dynasty life.